This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Conor McGregor clears the air on what's next. Ferguson and Lee face off to try to be the heir apparent to Conor's throne. The UFC announces some big upcoming fights. Does the UFC have a backup plan for UFC 219? And we tackle some of the biggest MMA stories with former Green Bay Packer linebacker AJ Hawk. Get that tackle the stories? Pretty good, right?
Not bad.
Smooth. Slip that in
there. Not bad.
So you're back from the Netherlands?
I am. A little jet-lagged here, yeah. But I'm
very
surviving.
Fun card. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you got to watch it.
Yeah, I got to watch it. It was, I was telling you, I was able to watch like five fights in 35 minutes because of all the action.
Yeah, it was so cool. Like, we have every Glory main card. We have a four-man tournament, a co-main event, and a main event. The tournament, all fights ended almost in, Michael Duke ended up winning two fights in, 36 seconds?
Something like that.
Yeah, his first fight was only, I think, 22 seconds. His second fight was only 12 seconds. And then we had good knockouts. The main event went five rounds. Robin Van Roosmalen and Sergey Adamczyk. Robin retains his featherweight title. And
yeah, a lot of fun.
It was tons of fun. I love Amsterdam. It's the home of, modern day Dutch kickboxing. So you get to see a lot of good guests. We had Stefan Struve come in and watch the show. Alistair Overeem was there watching. Badr Hari even came in to watch the show. And a lot of local Dutch kickboxers too. So yeah, I'm in my little fanboy world there.
Well, are the fans like going nuts during this? And is everybody pulling you aside when you're walking the streets? They know who you are. Like, is kickboxing that big there?
But kickboxing is really big, especially in certain parts of Amsterdam. Like, you get recognized quite a bit. And for me, because one of my most popular fights was against Nicky Holtzkin, who's very big in Amsterdam. So a lot of the local Dutch community, they just love me, love our fight with Nicky. So yeah, I get a nice warm welcome there in Amsterdam.
Well, that's awesome. And another part of Europe. This past Friday in Glasgow, Scotland, Conor McGregor did a Q&A. He cleared the air a little bit when it came to his future with the UFC and what he's looking to do. He mentioned Nate Diaz, said he was a little bit worried Diaz is going to price himself out of their trilogy fight, is interested to see what happens between Lee and Ferguson, also said he's interested to see what happens between Gaethje and Alvarez, and mentioned GSP. So all kind of options going forward that a lot of us kind of thought would be the case, but we didn't realize that McGregor was thinking about the stuff on top of the Diaz fight. A lot of people thought the Diaz fight was a foregone conclusion. What are your thoughts on those particular options? Is there one that stands out to you?
Well, I still like, I don't know, you're going to hit and probably not be happy with this. I still like Pauly Malignaggi. I'm all on top of those.
In MMA?
No.
That's what he mentioned. His coach mentioned, actually. They wanted Pauly to come over to MMA.
I want to see him in boxing, too.
That's probably the worst option.
And I know Pauly's coming, and he came out again. He's still calling out Conor, I just read before. But I like all the fights, but I think he just wants those biggest fights. I'm just concerned. I think Ferguson, the way he's been in the media lately, the way he's talking, I think Ferguson, if he gets past Lee, can be an awesome fight because he can bring that, the hype, the trash talking back and forth, which I think will sell a good fight. But I think other than Diaz, I think that's the fight I'd want with be Ferguson.
Well, for me, let's do some rankings. How about we do some rankings
okay.
as to what, what you most want to see and what you least want to see? Go.
Okay, so who would I most want to see?
Yeah.
I would probably have to put... I would put Diaz, probably. Is Pauly out of this?
Yeah, we're going to take Pauly.
We'll just keep it in UFC.
We'll stick with MMA here.
Okay, fair.
We'll take Pauly out of the mix.
Okay, I'll go with... I'd actually probably like to see Ferguson 1.
Ferguson 1? Okay.
I'll put Ferguson 1.
That would be a fun fight.
I think Ferguson 1. I would put Diaz 2. I would probably put... maybe Eddie Alvarez.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, he's fought Alvarez. He beat Alvarez.
Okay, but who did you say? Gaethje?
Gaethje and Alvarez. He was looking at the winner of that.
Oh, the winner of that. But okay. Yeah, that's right. He already dominated.
Yeah. It still would be a fun fight to watch again. But
well, after that, I think I'm okay with whatever ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm okay after that. But number one, I think one would be Ferguson. Two would be Diaz. And then the other ones, doesn't matter to me. What's your ranking?
My number one's GSP.
Okay.
I just think it's the biggest super fight you can make in MMA. And I think it would be a lot of fun. I think if GSP beats Bisping... I'd go GSP. If GSP loses to Bisping, he's probably going to retire.
But do you think GSP will bring a boring fight with Conor?
I don't really care. Like, I mean, GSP's fights have never been super fun to watch. But I think if he's able to just take down Conor and smother him, like, the fans will boo. Connor will end up looking good at the end. GSP will look good at the end. Like, it would be, everybody would win. Connor wouldn't lose anything from losing to GSP in a fight at once, like a super fight at 170 for five rounds with no title implications.
Yeah.
It's not going to stall any divisions. There's no titles on the line. I don't see why people would be upset about it. My number two is Kevin Lee.
Kevin Lee over Ferguson.
Over Ferguson. Because I think that if you look at the buildup to that fight, I think Kevin Lee has the gift of gab. I think he can really get McGregor up for a fight. I think he can go toe-to-toe with him in the promotional, in the promotional aspect. I don't think Ferguson can. Mm-hmm. Nothing against Ferguson's promotional skills. I think in a fight, I think Ferguson probably would be favored over Connor.
Yeah, see, I was looking more at entertainment as well, too.
Yeah, well, if I'm looking at entertainment, that's my one, too, is GSP Kevin Lee.
Okay.
My number three would probably be Tony Ferguson.
Okay.
Even over Diaz, I think that Ferguson and Connor would just be a really fun fight, and I think that that would really rebuild the meritocracy of the lightweight division. And
I agree.
Same with the Kevin Lee fight if Lee beats Ferguson. And then I'd go number four, Diaz, number five, Khabib.
Okay.
I just don't think, like at the Khabib fight, I don't think, A, it's a good matchup for Connor. I think Khabib could wrestle him for five rounds and dominate him.
Well, that's almost similar to a GSP style as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the fight that I think would kill Connor the most in terms of his name value. Like, if Khabib goes out there and dominates him for five rounds, I mean, of course, if he beats Khabib, he's as big a star as ever. But if Khabib wins five rounds wrestling, people are like, okay, well, this guy's obviously got his kryptonite, you know, dominant wrestling. But then, of course, like, Khabib in the last 3 years, I think the only guy he's beaten is Daryl Horcher, and that's not his fault. I mean, it was a late last-minute replacement. Yeah. But you got to look at the resumes, and I think Ferguson and Lee have gone through a lot of bigger names. Ferguson especially, you know, beaten Dos Anjos. You know, he I think is the guy that sets the bar for the highest in terms of a meritocracy angle. That's the best fight you can make in terms of skill for skill.
Oh,
but
definitely.
In terms of entertainment, I'd go GSP. I think GSP Connor is like the biggest super fight that you can make in
MMA. I think on paper
right now.
For sure. I think definitely on paper it's the biggest. But I'm looking at in-ring fighting. That's like I'm looking at, like, I want to see like
a
quality fun
fight. Him and Diaz 3 would be a fun fight.
Yeah. I don't know, I'm kind of bored of it. I don't know.
I am too a little bit. And that's kind of why I'm saying that. And also with Connor saying Diaz might price him out, if Diaz is looking for 20 to 30 million. So let's say you're the UFC and you're going to build this trilogy fight. It's the biggest fight in terms of box office you can make, even higher than probably GSP. But if you call Kevin Lee or Ferguson or whoever wins that fight and says, we're going to pay you $4 million to fight Connor, that's still the biggest payday by far of their career. Plus, then, of course, there's the notoriety that comes with beating Connor and a potential rematch. Like, you're basically betting on yourself at that price. If the UFC sells, let's say they sell 2.5 million pay-per-views with Connor and Nate. How many pay-per-views do they sell with Connor and either Lee or Ferguson? You got to think it's going to be close to $2 million anyways, just on Connor's name alone.
You would think so.
So is it worth an extra $15 million to make that fight?
Because Nate Diaz, you said $20 million, $20 to $30 million he wants for that fight.
Yeah, even if you charge $100 for that pay-per-view and you're selling $3 million, or like, $2.5 million versus $2 million at $80 or whatever, you're going to make that pay-per-view $70. It just doesn't add up. Like, you're better off just having Connor fight the winner of that fight.
I don't know if, is Kevin Lee even a name that McGregor's talking about? I just don't see him being that huge star power that he needs right
but
now.
But let's say Lee beats Ferguson, comes out on the mic and just starts ripping Connor, using his gift of gab, goes to the press conference afterwards. That's a fight that Lee, like the one he's made against Ferguson, because I don't think Lee was really on the radar.
Yeah, he's came creating
out,
it.
Yeah, he will create his own success, and he knows the business. That's what I like that about Kevin Lee. I think he's just a very savvy guy who knows what sells in this business.
Oh, for sure. Like, I mean, he's definitely going to be at the top, but I mean, it's a matter of when is it the time to give him Conor McGregor. Like, I mean, let him maybe build himself.
Well,
or
if he's got the interim championship, you know.
Yeah.
That's the fight you got to kind of make in order to bring meritocracy back to the division, because it's not like he's going to defend the interim title against all these other guys while Conor sits there as the champion and doesn't face him. That's just not how it works.
What about, why is he thinking of Gaethje?
Well, I just think Gaethje is a guy that is always going to bring an exciting fight, and he's a guy that really put himself on the map in his debut against Michael Johnson, and if he can go out there and beat Alvarez, to me, Alvarez and Gaethje is the most exciting fight right now that we have lined up for 2017. Might be the best fight of the year. Just on paper, those guys are two killers.
Yeah, just based on their styles.
Yeah, just walk forward, take damage, and just not blink. That's going to be an awesome fight. I can't wait to watch that fight. But I think if that's an exciting fight and people are talking about it, Conor will be like, okay, well, I'm interested now. Like, this guy, these guys have built themselves up.
Yeah, I just wonder what it's going to take a lot of these guys to get in there. I think Nate's going to price himself out. I definitely think he's going to price himself out way too high.
He hasn't taken any other fights since their last fight.
Yeah.
Whereas even Conor's fought since then.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have no idea what's going to happen. But, yeah, it's all exciting regardless.
So the UFC's announced some really big fights coming up for UFC 218 and 219. We've got Francis Ngannou against Alistair Overeem for UFC 218. Sergio Pettis and Henry Cejudo in the flyweight division for UFC 18. You got to imagine both of these are title eliminators and both awesome fights.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I'm excited for Overeem Ngannou. I just was going through Alistair Overeem's record. Man, he's been around a while. I didn't think he had as much MMA experience as he actually does. I was actually surprised with that.
Whereas Ngannou just started. Ngannou just basically starting.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's very new for Ngannou, and it's a big, big test.
Massive mountain to climb. You know, the thing that I'm interested with the UFC is those are two amazing fights. Do you think that the UFC could put out a pay-per-view that's stacked with great fights where there's no title on the line? Because if you look at Lee Ferguson before Demetrius and Borg was added, that was an interim title. It didn't really need to be an interim title. It looks like Conor's going to be fighting sometime in the coming months. But do you think that a title needs to be attached to a fight in order to make it a headliner?
I don't think so.
It seems like that's the mentality.
I think everyone, I personally don't even half the time look at the title or not. It's the fight to me that makes sense and how it's built and how it's performed, if anything. You could have, you know, and everyone says it, you can go on some of these fight night cards and not know a single name on that card, and you'll end up watching that card and saying, that was the best card I've seen in so long.
Like the Pittsburgh card, for
example. Yeah, we're like, oh, that was amazing. Every fight was awesome, you know, good knockouts, good performances, back and forth exchanges. They have split decisions. But you get some of the most stacked cards, and they don't perform. When you get two of the highest fight, highest caliber athletes fighting, they respect each other so much. That, you know, it's, you have to be more cautious. You have to be careful. You can't just be so reckless. So it's, you know, a lot of times it's those undercards. So, yeah, I think you can have a lot of cards without champions.
But what I had said about UFC 215 when they initially announced the card before it got dilapidated was they had Dos Santos versus Ngannou, they had DJ versus Borg, and they had Nunes versus Shevchenko. Now, Dana had said Nunes Shevchenko was not going to be a main event due to what had happened at UFC 213. To me, I think you headline with Ngannou Dos Santos, make it a five-round fight even though there's no title on the line, and have the two title fights underneath it. Because if that's the fight that's going to draw the most people, the most eyeballs, lead with it. Put your best foot forward. It doesn't matter if there's the title attached. If it's going to be an exciting fight and people know that, I don't think they care what the order is. And I think there was a lot of talk about whether Demetrius Johnson and Borg should have headlined over Lee and Ferguson this weekend. I think it's a moot point. If you hype up Lee and Ferguson as the winner of this fight is likely going to fight Conor McGregor,
that's the headline.
And Demetrius and Borg, if they looked at the tracking for UFC 215 in Edmonton and how many buys it had before that fight dropped off, and they saw, well, you know, this fight's not selling right now. So, you know, even though it's an interim title versus an official title, you lead with it. You lead with whatever the
Absolutely.
Most exciting fight
I think
is.
The only difference would be would it make it a five-round fight over a three-round, which I think both of those guys could probably use five-round practice anyways.
Yeah.
So for me, yeah, I think that's awesome. You got to put the biggest fight at the end. And I mean, if that's the biggest fight, you do it. Like you said, I don't think Borg and DJ was a huge enough fight. I think there's more hype between Ferguson and Lee. So you're right.
And you look at 218. If I'm a fan and I see Ngannou, Overeem, Pettis, Cejudo, and likely Gaethje versus Alvarez on that card, I'm buying it. Doesn't matter what the headline. I don't care if there's a title fight at the top. Does it matter?
Well, if you're a fan, you're a fan. I don't necessarily think the champions are necessarily the most popular in the division.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree.
I'm no more excited to see Holloway versus Edgar than I am to see Gaethje versus Alvarez. But the rumor is that that's what they're leaning towards for headlining that event, although they're apparently in some sort of contract discussions with Max Holloway, from what I understand. And if, you know, they're hoping to put that one together. But if you don't lead with that fight, I'm still in. I'm still in with those three fights that have been announced.
Even a lot of the fight nights don't have cards, and those are the ones we just said are the best, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even you have what coming up? There's Cowboy, Darren Till.
Yeah.
That could be another great fight,
and
it's not even...
Doesn't even have any real title implications right away.
But, I mean, you have two guys Cerrone, who's a veteran, against this new kid, right away you're into this fight, yeah, and you've seen this. Yeah,
it'll be on Fight Pass, but it'll still be fun to watch.
I agree.
Johnny Hendricks is moving over to Team Jackson Winklejohn. I don't know. I think this next fight with Johnny Hendricks has against Borinchenia, who's a huge undefeated prospect at MSG, is going to be very telling about the state of Johnny Hendricks' career.
Big time. I just don't understand. Even when I seen him at, you know, fighting at 170, I just don't know how he can't make the weight limit. Like, even when he weighs in at 170, he doesn't look lean by any means. And when he fights at 185, he just looks big to me. Like, it doesn't look athletic.
He looks husky. Yeah,
yeah, it doesn't look athletic to me.
And his reach is doesn't match up to a lot of the other guys. Yeah,
yeah. I don't get the move. I still think he, you know, if he wants to be in that sport, he should do the work to try to get down to stay at welterweight. But
he looks like death though when he cuts the weight.
I don't get it. But I mean, if
you look at his frame, I guess if he was dieting year round, you could get your walk around weight to, I don't know, 188, 189, and then cut 18, 19 pounds. Isn't that big of a deal for a lot of these guys?
Yeah, I'm sure he's cut that.
He walks around at like 220. Like, he's a huge dude.
Well, that's the problem right there. You don't need to be walking around 220.
Yeah.
Maybe in between your fights, say no to the extra slice of pizza. Say no to that burger and fries. Like,
he ran a steak restaurant, you know? Like,
well, there's things to say no to. You don't need to eat dessert after every meal, you know? So, I mean, I think if he did the work, he would be, you know, still very strong as a welterweight.
Yeah, even Derek Lewis, who's at heavyweight and has to cut to make 265, he said in an interview with Flow Combat recently that he's furious that he has to cut McRibs out of his diet and someone's got to pay for it.
Yeah,
which is a funny way to take it.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's going to be Werdum next.
Yeah, that's this weekend, UFC 216. Let's look at some of these fights. Ferguson versus Lee. Now, this, to me, on paper, I think Ferguson has a lot of the advantages here. I think the only advantage Lee has is wrestling. I think Lee's wrestling is a cut above Ferguson's. But when you take down Ferguson, you're getting into that
jiu-jitsu game.
Yeah,
now
that
submission
game. Crazy guard of his. He's always getting into mission control and doing crazy things off his back.
His darce chokes.
Yeah, his chokes, exactly. And I think he has the most darce choke finishes in UFC history. If he doesn't, it would shock me. He's won 9 in a row. Lee's won 5 in a row. To me, this is an excellent fight. I can't wait to watch this fight.
Yeah, he's 5. I just counted 5 darce chokes.
Yeah.
I just counted 5.
It's got to be the most in UFC history.
Yeah.
I can't think of anybody having it even close.
No.
But I think, you know, I have to lean Ferguson in this fight. I think
I agree.
He's got a lot of the advantages, and I think that. But I don't want to disregard Kevin Lee. I think
Kevin Lee is
a guy who hits hard. He's a guy who gets a lot of takedowns and is a very smart fighter. A lot of people I've heard say that this is a coin flip fight, that it's a 51-49 type deal for Ferguson. I'd peg it more like 60-40.
Do you know Vegas odds?
Yeah, Ferguson is more than a 2-1 favorite in this fight. So I think the odds certainly favor Ferguson, but they might favor him a little bit more than they should. I think that this is a closer fight than that line would indicate.
Yeah, I can see it. If I was a betting man, I would pick Ferguson. I think that's the winner of it. But Kevin Lee's looking good. He's getting better.
Young.
He's got a perfect camp. He's young. He's confident. He has what it takes to do it, so you can't count him out. But, yeah, definitely I would say Ferguson, in my eyes, is a 2-1 favorite.
Yeah. That's going to be an interesting fight. I think Ferguson will probably pull it out, but
decision. Are you seeing decision? Or are you seeing?
No,
a finish?
I think he'll finish him. But I think that if he wins, he'll finish him. And if it goes decision, I think you got to start looking more towards Lee, because you're talking 5 rounds, and Lee will certainly put his foot on the gas. That said, I don't know how good Lee's cardio is over 5 rounds. Where I know that Ferguson's cardio is very good in 5 rounds.
Yeah.
So. That'll be an interesting fight. Then, of course, we got Demetrius Johnson versus Ray Borg. A fight that, again, I've said, I think that the odds are way off on this one. I think that Borg can give Demetrius Johnson some problems. I don't see Johnson as a 13-1 favorite. I don't think it's that lopsided of a fight.
13-1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are big odds for a title fight.
Well,
those are cyborg type odds.
Yeah. I don't know, but he's shown that he deserves the 13-1 favorite. Hopefully Ray Borg does something, especially making us wait so long after all. Not his fault, but you know what I mean? I want this fight to finish. I don't know if, I want it to happen now, and so we can see DJ move on.
Yeah, or Borg become the champion.
Yeah, something. I need something.
I wouldn't put all my eggs in that basket, but again, I think that it's a closer fight than the odds indicate. I think Borg is, when you see these young guys in the sport, guys like Borg, guys like Kevin Lee, it's hard to underestimate how much better they're getting in every camp. And you also have to remember that Borg, early on in his career in the UFC, was not fighting at Team Jackson Winklejohn. Now he's at a top camp. He looked to me like his dieting was under control. I know he was with Perfecting Athletes for his last fight and recently dropped them, but has been working with UFC nutritionists to make sure that he's going to be on weight. So this is a fight where I think Borg, if this gets into scrambles, if this gets into wrestling, Borg has a lot of tricks up his sleeve. So I don't want to write Ray Borg off like a lot of people are.
I'm writing him off.
You think it's a foregone conclusion that DJ takes the record?
Yep.
All right, I guess we'll see on Saturday. Touche.
Yeah, I have to be honest. I just can't see Borg doing much. I think he's talented. I'm not going to say he's not a talented. He's incredible. He's a great fighter, great heart, very young, very talented. But you're talking about someone we're putting as pound for pound number one, and I think he's just at a different level.
Yeah, and I mean, Borg, I think, made a point when Johnson fought Tim Elliott and had troubles with Tim Elliott in the first round, lost that first round, where Borg does a lot of the same things. He's very tricky when it comes to scrambles. And if this gets into the grappling realm, I think Borg, if he can get DJ's back, can be a handful. Because Borg is a pretty big flyweight. He's got good chokes. He's got really good grappling and transitions. So that's where I think Borg can have success in this fight.
Yeah, I just think the fact that DJ is just so explosive, dynamic, athletic, dynamic, that being bigger doesn't really help you in this fight a lot of the times because he's so good at using movement, angles, and footwork, and just hitting on those angles, you can't really hit him. So I think being slower is actually a disadvantage against DJ.
Yeah, let's look at Fabricio Werdum versus Derek Lewis. This is an interesting fight to me. I think it's a big step up in competition for Lewis, who's actually coming off a loss. But Werdum is also coming off a loss himself to Overeem, albeit a bit of a suspect loss. I personally thought Werdum won that fight or that it was a draw. But looking at this one, I think that Lewis's best success could come in the first round. I think Lewis needs to try to implement his striking and hope that Werdum doesn't try to take it to the ground. If Werdum is able to take it to the ground, I think that there's trouble. I do think that Lewis could have some success if Werdum tries to pull guard. If Werdum tries to get crafty and bring him down, Lewis has shown to be a real handful from top.
Yeah, his ground and pound, right?
Yeah.
His punches from top.
Yeah, it's from another, it's another level of ground and pound. He smashes you into the ground. Like, he becomes the Incredible Hulk when he's on top of you.
You got to think of his wins. He actually fought one of my friends, Gudo Inocenc, a glory kickboxer.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
that was, I think, his debut in the UFC.
That was his second.
Second fight,
second
okay.
Second fight, yeah. Shout out Gudo.
So we'll see what happens there. This is the one that is a bit of a head-scratch for me. Mara Romero Borrella, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right because I've never heard of her before, is fighting Kalindra Faria in the women's flyweight division on the main card. Now, you've got guys like Tom Duquesnoy, who's one of the top prospects in the sport, against Cody Stamann, who's another top prospect. And then you've got Will Brooks, former Bellator champion, against Nick Lentz. Bobby Green, who's an exciting fighter, against Lando Venata, another exciting fighter.
Bobby Green's been off for a little bit.
Yeah, he's had like a bunch of different layoffs in between. I think he's actually fought somewhat recently, as opposed to in some of his previous
Venata looks good, too.
Venata definitely looks good.
Venata,
I mean,
looks awesome.
He's coming off a loss to David Tamer, which was a tough one for him. But then, of course, you look at Moraga versus Babulatov on the Fight Pass prelims and Laitis versus Taveras. It seems like you have a lot of different fights you could put up on that main card that has more name value. Now, the only reason I can imagine they would have this on the main card is they're trying to build up Faria as a title contender at flyweight, or Borrella if they think that she's got what it takes. So that'll be interesting to see.
Well, it seems like they're always trying to showcase at least one of the women's fights. So maybe that's their, they can't keep neglecting the women's. They got to keep showcasing them. So, but again, they could have been on the headline of the Fox card.
Yeah. They do like to have a good TV. Like, I like Duke and Wans and Stamann as the headliner of that prelims card just to get people to watch the main card. So I think Tom Duquesnoy is one of the best prospects in the entire sport. He's a guy to watch. If you're not familiar with him.
I'm not even that familiar
French
with
fighter, two-division champion in BAMA, which is a British MMA organization. I think if he can beat Stamann, he's on the map. Like, and I think that's why they have that as the main event on TV. They want eyes on Tom Duquesnoy. Benil Dariush versus Evan Dunham, a great fight as well.
That's a really good fight.
Yeah.
How do you pronounce that name?
Dariush.
Dariush. I always butcher it. But he actually works with one of the Glory fighters, so I actually get to see him quite often. He works with Giga Chikadze at King's MMA.
Yeah, with Cordero.
Yeah, so I get to see him quite often at Glory events. Evan Dunham's tough, though.
He's a tough out. Now, Dariush is a pretty big favorite in that fight, but you can never write off Evan Dunham.
Now, is Dunham the same Dunham we know?
Yeah. Long time.
No, I mean, like, is it the same kind of fighter that we know?
Well, I think so. He looked really good in his last fight.
Which was his last? I remember watching it, but I don't remember who.
I don't remember. I do remember he looked good.
Yeah.
But I can't remember who his opponent was, but he got a win. But that's going to be a fun fight to open up the main card. I think that'll get people excited. Because Dariush has been looking really good in the striking game recently. He was more of a grappler early on in his career. One thing I wanted to talk to you about is CBD oil.
Yeah.
Now, CBD is going to be permitted by WADA starting next year. It's you know a lot about it because you think that it's really good for recovery for a lot of these fighters.
Yeah, it's really good, I would say, for not only just athletes and fighters, but a lot of people in general who suffer from, you know, chronic pain, chronic inflammation, arthritis, anxiety, depression. So there's a whole bunch of things. There's even cancer-curing properties to it that people are talking about. But one of the things that really struck me and why I started using it regularly was because it has neuroprotectant properties. So it actually protects the neurons in your brain from multiple concussions. So what they were doing was they had, I believe it was pigs, that they gave pigs CBD and cannabis. And then they gave them, I hate to say it, but they were giving these pigs concussions. And the pigs who had the marijuana and the CBD in their system recovered quicker and better from multiple concussions than the pigs that didn't. So right away, they know there's properties. I did a lot of research. There's a lot of NFL doctors who, you know, wish that, you know, the NFL would allow these players because of that neuroprotecting properties. He said, I would give these NFL athletes CBD oil about 2 hours or an hour before practicing games and an hour after. This way they're getting that benefit. And this way, one of the big issues with fighters and combat athletes and wrestlers is the pain. So why are we dealing with pain? So it's easy to go, you know, to the drugstore and get all this ibuprofen and Advils, and you keep popping it and popping it, and your liver just takes such a beating. Yeah. Hit me up if you have any questions.
Look at that. It's like a medical show now.
Yeah, there you go. I've been studying and researching it so much. Boss Rudin's huge. I know Anthony Johnson left the UFC to start his own CBD company.
Speaking of which, he might be coming back.
Really?
On the MMA Hour, I'm glad you reminded me of this because I'd love to talk about it. Ali Abdelaziz, his manager, was a guest and said that he thinks that Anthony Johnson's going to come back next year and fight at heavyweight.
I guess the CBD company wasn't doing well.
Maybe it is.
Maybe it's good and that's why he's back. Yeah.
He wants to fight at heavyweight.
Really?
Which is cool. I mean, that means he'll have fought, I think, in all four.
He started as a welterweight.
Yeah, he'll fight at welterweight, middleweight, light heavyweight, and heavyweight in the UFC, which is pretty crazy.
Wasn't he like one of the biggest weight cut fails? Oh, as a
massive
welterweight, I think he came in at like 180 pounds. He's scary.
I think at 185, when he was fighting at 185, he came in at like 194 or something.
Yeah, it's one of the worst I've ever seen. Yeah.
Which is strange, because when he weighed in against Cormier earlier this year in Buffalo, he weighed like 203. So he was well under the 205 threshold. Like, he was one of the last guys to come out, and everybody's like, oh, man, he might not be on weight. And then he comes out, and they're like, do you want to take the sweatpants off? He's like, nah. And he got on the scale, and it was like 203.
Oh, sometimes you just get lucky. Sometimes, like, that extra, like,
Cormier didn't get lucky at that time. There was Towelgate.
Yeah. Sometimes you're like, oh, my God, you'll literally step on the scale, and, you know, you'll lose an extra 2 pounds. You're like, why did I lose this?
I think he just knew he was going to be on weight. He was on, like 202 the night before and whatever. Or 204 or something, just rolled out of bed and went in. Why wake up early? UFC 219. Obviously, the plan, from what I understand, is that Conor McGregor versus Diaz was always going to be kind of slated for that card. That part of the negotiations with Conor taking up boxing was that he would fight on that card. Now, Conor has said he would be willing to fight at UFC 219, but only if he didn't need to do any media in the weeks leading up to it. He can get on the scale and that's it. So if that's the case, I still think that it's a good business proposition for the UFC, although having Conor promote the fight is obviously more beneficial. But if Conor's not going to fight on UFC 219, I think they're in a bit of trouble. Like, I don't know what would headline. That's considered one of their marquee cards of the year. I don't know what would headline that card.
That would be in December, right?
Yeah, December. Because they've got the big card in November with GSP and Bisping. So what do you do for that big end of year card that's going to really turn people's heads? And I can't come up with a good answer for that.
No, if you can't, I don't know what I'm coming up with.
I hope they have a backup plan. I hope there's something.
I can't see the fight happening. And I mean, Dana White came out.
Which was Conor and Diaz?
I can't see Conor fighting up
then again
that
right
early.
Now, it's what? It's early October. So in 2.5 months, the winner of Lee and Ferguson could realistically turn it around and fight.
But do you think Connor is training full time, camp style? I don't think so. He's probably
Not right now, but yeah. you're not in camp until that fight's announced, right? Like you have time.
Yeah, I think it's early. I think it's stupid for him to want to go in for a fight and not promote it. You're just coming off one of the biggest fights in combat sports history, and then all of a sudden
but
you're not going to promote.
That is the promotion, right?
Like, true.
I don't know if Connor needs to promote a fight that heavily at this point.
Well, I mean, I think it would help, obviously, yeah. but.
I mean, if you think of his last fight, the biggest pay-per-view, I think one of the biggest pay-per-views the UFC has ever done, if not the biggest, is the rematch with Diaz, and he didn't do any media leading up to that fight.
I just think you need to capitalize on that last fight. He needs to be media ready. I think he can talk about his experience with Floyd and get people hyped up, and I think he needs it. I think it would be a mistake to jump in too early to say that.
Yeah.
But Dana came out and says he doesn't think it's happening.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean he doesn't think Connor's fighting in December. He just doesn't think that Connor and Diaz
And Diaz happening. Is fighting.
Right, so I mean, that's where some moving parts come into play.
Yeah, well.
And Connor has said it's important to him to defend that belt. He says the thing that he hears the most from fans is that he doesn't defend titles, which he hasn't. He has zero title defenses at either featherweight or lightweight. So he wants to shush the haters. That's kind of what Connor likes to do. That's what motivates him, is proving people
yeah,
wrong.
Definitely. So we'll now he has a son in the picture, so who knows if that's extra case, but I'm sure he's got a bunch of nannies and helpers with him after that money he won. I think he's okay.
Yeah, I think he's doing all right. Well, we have a pretty interesting guest today, Joe. We've got A.J. Hawk, a former Green Bay Packer who now hosts a show on Sirius XM Rush, an MMA show, which is pretty interesting. He's a big advocate of the sport, really enjoys it. And we were lucky enough to check in and catch up with A.J. Hawk, former Green Bay Packers linebacker and a top five NFL draft pick back in 2006.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
We're now joined by the former linebacker from the Green Bay Packers, devoted MMA enthusiast, as per this press release I have in front of me, and of course, now the host of MMA Today on Sirius XM Rush, doing a lot of things with Sirius XM, working with Sirius XM NFL Radio, Sirius XM College Sports Nation, and the host of the Hawkcast. Pretty big resume outside of the world of football. AJ Hawk joins us now on the TSN MMA show. How are you, AJ?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Did I miss anything? Did I miss anything on the resume?
No, I think I'm just dabbling in all kinds of different things that I enjoy. So it's been fun to talk about the things that I love to watch. So, yeah. You hit it all.
Well, that's where I want to get started. How did you get into MMA in the UFC? As an NFL player, you're probably laser-focused on what you're doing, but I had listened to an interview from you on the Anakin Florian show about a year ago, and you said, I'm a fan, I like watching it, but now you're a host. You're probably a lot more knowledgeable than you were then.
Yeah, I'm definitely more, current, I guess, just because, I've always been a fan. Actively watching a lot of the fights in UFC and the other organizations for the last 10 years, maybe, I'd say at least 10 to 12 years. And I got lucky enough to where I sat in and kind of co-hosted a few shows on Sirius XM 93 where they have their MMA shows. And after a while, they just asked me if I wanted to be a co-host a couple nights a week with them. And so, yeah, here I am, Tuesday and Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. on Channel 93, talking about MMA, which I never thought I'd get to do. I said, I love to watch football and I love to watch fighting, and now I get to talk about them both, so it's a great time.
Yeah, like I've always been asked many times if what athlete would probably be the best in the MMA octagon, and I always said a football linebacker. Would you agree with that?
Maybe some of them. I think hockey players might have a better chance, not even the guys that fight. I think, honestly, hockey players are some of the toughest guys I've ever been around, and I've worked out with them, hung out with them, gone out with them, geez, drank with them. You got to be kidding me. Those guys are men. And so I think they have, like, the mentality a little bit more sometimes to fight MMA. Football players, yeah, definitely. There's a few. I've played with some guys I think could have definitely – have gotten the MMA world if they would have started at a young age. But I don't know. I think all the different sports, I think a lot of football players, especially myself, we look at fighters and we just have so much respect for that. And just getting in a cage one-on-one and fighting a guy, that's just something that we can't even wrap our heads around.
Have you had the urge to do it before?
For like 10 minutes. I've always thought about it. I was like, man, wouldn't that be amazing if I could find a way – when I'm done playing football to fight. That would be really cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
And maybe five or six years ago, while I was playing in the off season, I would train with this guy who fought in Ohio on some of like the underground circuits and nothing huge. And he was only like 185 pounds. I was 240 at the time. And we would grapple and train a little bit. And I knew instantly when this dude, man, when he would get on top of me and I couldn't get up, I was like, this is the most helpless situation ever. When this guy is 50 pounds lighter than me and he is holding me, it was just a real humbling experience. And that's why I have so much respect for it.
Yeah, I was a kicker and punter from my university back here. And my team used to always laugh because I was going to be a professional fighter. So they used to go to the other teams and be like, yeah, my kicker will kick your kicker's ass, you know? Not even like my kicker will kick your linebacker's ass if you really wanted to. So we had a lot of fun with that.
There's good carryover. Yeah, if you're a kicker and punter, of course. Yeah, why not go into kickboxing?
Yeah, no, I'd done martial arts since I was a kid, but it was just funny to be in a position around all these big alpha males who think they're tough. And then, you know, the kicker ends up being one of the toughest on the team. It took a hard time for them to get through to that.
Yeah, we've seen guys from lots of different walks of life and other sports try their hand at MMA. Steve Bosse has been in the UFC, former hockey player from the minor leagues. Walt Harris is fighting this weekend, a former basketball player. So is Travis Brown. And then from the football end of things, you got Eric Anders, who looked great in his last fight, was a linebacker for the national championship Alabama Crimson Tide a couple years ago. So it is interesting to see these guys from different sports try their hand at MMA.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to see that and see them have some success as well. I think, I don't know, we have to go back and look at each and every guy. I would think at some point in your life you have to have some kind of wrestling background, I would imagine. See, I grew up playing football, baseball, and basketball, so I have no wrestling background either. So it's like, man, I'm really behind the eight ball. But, yeah, it definitely – one thing that doing – even training like MMA does for football players, it really – it helped me at least – help me use my hands. And as a linebacker, that's the number one thing I'm doing is using my hands to get off the blocks, to not let blockers get to you. And it was just, that's one of the things that was huge.
Well, I wanted to ask your opinion on Conor McGregor. This past week, he came out and spoke at an evening with Conor McGregor in Glasgow, Scotland, was talking about some options for him, which were Kevin Lee and Tony Ferguson, the winner of the fight this weekend, Khabib Nurmagomedov, GSP's name came up. As someone who enjoys watching the sport and is following the sport, obviously hosting a show about the sport, what's your preference, AJ, if you could choose what was next for Conor?
Well, I mean, we have this argument on our show on Sirius a lot, and I'm sure I will tonight even. So I love MMA, but I'm not like an MMA purist to where I feel like that you have to fight the next guy in line and whoever's. I think you fight who the fans want you to fight. And I think it's great sometimes that the fans can put fights together. And I'm sorry, some people get upset, but I want him to fight Nate Diaz. I want a trilogy. I'd love to see that happen. If he can't fight Nate, for myself as a person that loves watching fighting, I think the winner of Ferguson Lee would be an amazing fight for him. I just don't know if it has the same kind of firepower as a trilogy with Nate Diaz. And he threw GSP out there. That's, I don't know. He has to get by Bisping first, but I would pay to see a Conor McGregor GSP fight.
That's the one I want to see. If he beats Bisping, let's do that. Let's have some fun. You know, you can sell it very easily. You got a legend from the past against the current star. Both guys holding belts in two different divisions. If he beats Bisping, he'll be a two division champion. It's the ultimate super fight you can make in MMA. I know a lot of purists, as you mentioned, AJ. A lot of them like the hierarchy and meritocracy. This is a business. The UFC is not in this to make only the fights that make sense from a meritocracy standpoint. They want to make some money here. I mean, this is a business we're talking about, a promotion, not necessarily just the sport. I mean, this isn't like in the NFL, the Super Bowl. It's not always the two best teams that make the Super Bowl, but it's the two best teams at that moment. So I just think that's the most fun fight that they can make.
Oh yeah, and that's why I think the UFC has been great. They will make fights. I mean, why do you think Conor Floyd Mayweather happened? Like, it got thrown out there, and over a course of 18 months, 2 years, it's like it just started building. It was like a grassroots movement to get that fight to happen. So that's why I think I respect what the UFC does a lot of times, and I know I'm torn at the same time because fighters that feel like they are in line for these title fights, they don't get them. They get skipped over. But that's how it goes. I mean, all sports are still entertainment at the core, and you have to be entertaining for people to pay the money to watch. So there's definitely an entertainment aspect, and fighting being a one-on-one deal, you have to sell yourself, and you have to find a way to go. I always hear Chael Sonnen and talk about he's out there to pick fights. He's not making fights, and so he if you pick fights, you can kind of jump the line and look how. I mean, look no further than Kevin Lee. His post fight interview, he gets into it with Ferguson, while Ferguson's working the desk for Fox, and bam, here they are fighting.
You make your own luck, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like Ferguson's, though, is on a trash-talking rampage as well. I think he got into a little verbal scrap with Verdum at some point.
Well, that's a fight that's never going to happen.
Yeah, but I mean, he seems like he's out there now. He's really pushing this trash-talking.
Oh, yeah, I listened to Eddie Bravo, who works out with Ferguson a lot, and talks about how just Ferguson is an absolute machine in all of his workouts. Everything he does is really unique and exotic. And he just never stops. And that's why I think we're seeing Ferguson kind of come into his own now. And he's a great talker. He's a crazy dude. And I think that's what's amazing. He's not scared when he gets in the ring or the octagon. So that little altercation with Verdum was amazing. I give him credit for Verdum stood up and was like towering over top of him. And Ferguson sat there and was still in his chair like nothing happened. I was like, man, that would be a tough situation to stay seated while he's standing up in front of you. I thought it handled it great, and yeah, it was all fun.
It seems like these smaller guys keep going after Verdum. Luke Rockhold wanted to fight Verdum. I don't know why Verdum's rubbing all these people the wrong way.
Yeah, what is that? I don't know. What happens? Like in the fight game, you can't. It's good for the little guy though. It's a win-win. Like chances are that fight, they're not going to sit there and they're not going to fight. So the little guy's always going to look like, oh man, this guy's not going to back down from anybody. And the big guy, no matter what he does, he loses.
He looks like the bully.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a pretty interesting turn of events there. I mean, how do you see Lee and Ferguson going? Again, you mentioned Lee. He was able to kind of talk his way into this title fight. And for me, if Lee is able to win, the UFC need to bet on this guy. Get him on any talk show you can get him on. He loves doing media. This is a dream come true for the UFC, having a guy like Kevin Lee get to this level.
He is. He's definitely, when you like watch him, not only when he fights, he's such an exciting fighter and so talented, but then, yeah, when he takes the mic, when he talks, he's entertaining, and he seems like a rising superstar, like the next young guy that's going to kind of pop. And if he can find a way to get past Tony Ferguson, I think you're 100% right. The UFC knows what they have in the making, and I even think win or lose, even if it's a great fight and Kevin Lee loses, he'll still gain a ton of respect if it's like one of those battles. And could still, you know, still looking up for him. And who knows? You never know. Kevin Lee will sit there and call out. I could see Kevin Lee, if he lost the fight, still calling out Conor McGregor or something. Like, he doesn't care, man. He's a smart fighter and a businessman, it seems like.
Yeah, that fight's getting a lot of hype because it even pushed Demetrius Johnson and Ray Borg down the line. And, I mean, what's your take on Demetrius Johnson? Do you put him at pound for pound number one, or how do you rank him?
I hear Joe Rogan always talks about how he feels like DJ is the pound-for-pound greatest fighter in the world. And if you really look at what he's done in his fights, he probably is. I'm not an expert to sit here and say that's an argument you can have till the end of time. But he's unbelievable. He really is. And I just don't get it. It's something I always wonder, like, why does he not have that crazy following that he should when he's such an amazing fighter? But what's weird about DJ is he's not like a quiet, just go about his business guy. He's a great outgoing, a really funny guy that has a really good
role model
as well. Yeah, so I'm like, is it just because he's small? Like, do people just not relate because they feel like they see this little guy, like, oh, how can that guy be an amazing fighter? I guess that's just like the ignorance of people that don't know anything about MMA.
Yeah.
That they probably see this little guy, like, oh, I could probably take this guy. I'm like, no, you couldn't. Trust me. No matter what, you cannot take this guy.
Well, it's weird. The thing about DJ and a lot of these other fighters, people ask why they're not marketable. You just can't make people feel a certain way. Certain fighters resonate with people, and it's kind of an intangible that I don't think can really be quantified.
It can't. And the execs, the bosses, can never tell you either, like, who is going to go over with the fans and who people are going to love. It's just whatever reason. Some people have it. I mean, just look at Cormier and John Jones. I mean, John Jones got in trouble so many times with the law, and they're booing DC at press conferences, and now I think DC has come around, and people absolutely love him and see him for who he is and how great of a guy and fighter he is. But it's weird, like, what the fighters that people are attracted to and will pay to see sometimes is pretty interesting.
Yeah, maybe DJ's not, you know, doing enough outside of the ring to make people buy onto him, right? But I mean, again, I like it that he's the positive guy, the role model guy, doing all of these amazing things for the sport. But I don't know, maybe sometimes society wants the bad guy as much as, you know, we don't want to admit.
Yeah, they want someone who's out there like that they've heard of, and people that don't know anything about even fighting, boxing, MMA, anything. They all knew, they at least know the name of Conor McGregor, and they've seen a few clips of him speaking. So it's like you have to be able to kind of sell yourself. And I don't know. Fighting is a different world, man. You got to be a fighter, and then you got to be your own promoter at the same time, and then sell yourself to everybody.
But you were an extremely popular football player, and I looked at your resume today, and I was shocked that you hadn't made any Pro Bowls, because your name was always it was always up there with the best linebackers in the game.
Oh, yeah, I don't know, man. Well, what's weird is the Pro Bowl is different now, like how they send a million guys because
the backups and substitutes.
Well, yeah, so like I went our Super Bowl year, I guess I was an alternate, and I didn't even know it till like 3 months later. Because I got a game check actually for being there. I was like, this is amazing. I got named in Pro Bowl. Like, I knew I was an alternate, but they got, because of people getting hurt, I guess, in front of me. So then I couldn't go because we were in the Super Bowl, and then I got a check like 2 months later. I was like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. I was excited.
I have a question for you, too. I know with me, and I'm sure you have a lot of football friends who use it, but CBD, the marijuana extract, is now permitted by WADA.
It is? Really? Oh, that just happened?
Yeah, starting next year, yeah. And I know guys like Kyle Turley in the NFL, and there's another offensive lineman from Baltimore whose name eludes me at the moment. They're strong advocates of it.
Yeah, he had a Viceland, I believe, documentary I saw.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's a lot of fighters using it, and, I mean, I've even had conversations. I don't know if you know him from he has, like, a CTE foundation, Chris Nowitzki.
I know of him, yeah. I don't know him personally.
Yeah, but I know it's good for brain. I'm taking it more for brain recovery, and it's an anti-inflammatory. So I think a lot of fighters are excited about that. Do you know much about it?
I don't. I see Boss Rutten talking about it, too. And Jake Plummer, the quarterback, he was big on it. I've actually had some conversations with Jake. I know he is involved with a company out in Colorado. I've never tried it, but I've always been interested in that, and especially as I get older. Yeah, we're all going to need something, especially anything that can help, that shows any kind of positive effects on brain health. I think we should put all our money behind it and see exactly what we can do to help people out that are in combat sports.
Yeah, there was an NFL doctor, again, I'm not sure the names, but he said he wanted to make it legal for NFL players, and he said if it was up to him, he would have them take CBD, I think, a few hours before a game or practice and a few hours after, because there's some properties that say it's like a neuroprotectant, so it's protecting neurons in your brain. So a lot of people are going to start jumping on it.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, let's be real. Like, you can't act like people in the NFL don't smoke. I mean,
that's for sure.
Pro sports in general, you get tested once a year for street drugs, and they know, like, they have some kind of idea of when the test is coming. So you shouldn't get caught if you're halfway smart.
That's an IQ test.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. You guys know. So it's I think they. I'm sure over the next 2 to 5 years, we'll see a lot of change when it comes to all that stuff.
Yeah, it just surprises me because the NFL. Has a bit of a crisis when it comes to painkillers at times. And I don't believe CBD has, like, addictive, like, no. It doesn't have an opiate effect that a lot of these other drugs do that some players are getting hooked on.
Oh, man, 100%. And that's the thing. Like, I spent most of my 11 years, I spent 9 of them in Green Bay, and they're super, super conservative about everything they do. Like, they care about the player first. And every team's not like that. Like, they weren't giving pills out. It wasn't like that at all, like people think. But I know other teams definitely are, speaking to buddies of mine. And there's nothing scarier, I think, than pills. I have 4 young kids, and every day I think about at some point, like, man, how do I teach my kids to make good decisions as they get older and they're presented with this? Because especially with these, like, painkillers that kids will take from their parents' medicine cabinet or whatever, wherever they get them. Like, it doesn't take long to get hooked. And once they're hooked, man, like, it's a rough deal coming off of it. I've had people that I know in my life that have had issues with it, and it's brutal to see. So they have to find a way to fix that.
Yeah, well, hopefully that's on the horizon. Well, I want to thank you, AJ. Again, Sirius XM Rush, Tuesday through Thursday. MMA Today. You're on the Tuesday and Thursday edition with RJ Clifford, who's been a longtime host at SiriusXM. And I want to thank Marissa, who runs SiriusXM Rush, for setting this up. She's awesome. I hang out with her a lot at the events. Her and Luke Thomas are always hustling, getting good interviews for SiriusXM. And again, the Hawkcast, a fantastic podcast. You recently had Charles Barkley on, always the top guests possible. Thanks for being on the show, and we look forward to speaking with you again in the future.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Great conversation with AJ Hawk. Now, I'm really looking forward to 216 this weekend. I don't know how big of a seller it'll be, a big box office ticket in terms of pay-per-view, but I think it's a really good card. I think the main card is really good at the top of the two title fights, and I think the prelim card is absolutely worth watching, and you can catch that on TSN. So, Joe, thanks for joining us. I know you're not going to be with us next week. You're going
to
China.
Yeah, I'm a little upset, but yeah, I'm excited to be in China. That's where we have that Rico Verhoeven versus Bigfoot Silva from the UFC.
Have you been there before?
First time to China? No, we're going to Guangzhou, China.
Wow, that'll be cool.
Yeah, it's exciting. There's a lot of good fights. The Chinese market is huge. A lot of people are questioning the food there, but I like trying new food.
Apparently, the food is like very similar to if you get Chinese food in Toronto. Like if you
go
to an authentic
okay.
Chinese restaurant, yeah.
A lot, because a lot of people were complaining about the food. I mean, maybe they're just not from Toronto.
Yeah, exactly. We have a diverse,
amazing Chinese food.
Well, you know what?
Right?
I think in any city you can get kind of authentic Chinese food.
Yeah,
it's not super different.
The one thing I'm not excited for is that long flight. But I got a direct flight from Toronto to China. I think it'd be about
how long is it?
I think it's 16 hours.
Oh, well.
It'll be the longest flight.
Get those Netflix downloads going.
Yeah, now that you showed me that was a nice trick.
Yeah, did you use it?
No, I didn't.
No.
I ended up watching Baywatch on the plane.
Oh, yeah, that's a big mistake.
Which was the biggest mistake I made. It was terrible. Yeah, it was bad. But learned a lesson.
Yeah, learned a lesson to listen to me.
Yeah,
go on Netflix,
listen to
download different series.
Yeah.
The Good Place is worth watching. Good comedy series if you want to watch that.
Okay.
Narcos is very good. If you've
seen it, been there.
All right, been there, done that. Peaky Blinders is on Netflix now.
I downloaded Ballers before, which
Ballers?
Was good.
Okay.
Yeah, I watched Ballers and I was watching Animal Kingdom season 2.
Yeah, Planet Earth season 2 is now. Planet Earth 2 is on Netflix now, too.
Yeah, that was on the plane. Like I watched one episode on it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, had a lot of 8 hours on a plane.
So you had the screen?
The screen,
Yeah, that's a game changer.
It's just, yeah, it's nice. I don't want to have my laptop out on my lap, so it's nice.
All right, well, have a safe flight. And,
all right, we'll see you soon.
Yeah, hopefully that main event is good.
I hope so. Hope it's good for kickboxing.
Rico Verhoeven versus Bigfoot Silva. So if Bigfoot Silva wins, is there going to be like a big funeral procession afterwards?
I don't know what's going to happen because, yeah, we have Rico already booked in December for Glory Redemption in Rotterdam.
Yeah, so he's already booked for a follow-up title fight in Rotterdam, but he's fighting.
This isn't a title fight. This is a super fight. Yeah, it's going to be a showcase
three rounds, and then the title in
Rotterdam. I think so. Why not? I mean, we have Chris Camozzi coming up in New York December 1st.
Oh, yeah, that'll be cool. Who's he against?
They haven't really picked anyone yet.
Okay.
So
that'll be good to see his debut.
I hope a lot more UFC athletes want to come over. I mean, you're on UFC Fight Pass. Good, you know, help work your stand-up game in between.
Well, put me in touch with the Glory's PR person. We'll get Chris Camozzi on the show.
That's it. I will.
Awesome.
We'll get
it
done.
All right, Joe.
We'll
have a safe flight. Next week, Elias Theodoro will join me here as a co-host, and we look forward to some more great MMA talk and recapping UFC 216.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.